Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, 9 miles in Lee. This is the Autosport Podcast. Well, Red Bull qualified first and fourth and finished first and fourth, but it wouldn't be the fairy tale conversion of pole position to race win for Sergio Perez. Instead, it was Max Verstappen taking the win over Ferrari's Charles Leclerc by half a second with an enthralling last gasp battle between the two. Carlos Sainz finishing third as Ferrari extend their constructors' lead over Red Bull. Sergio Perez did everything right, according to Christian Horner, until that early pit stop that he took, followed a lap later by a safety car, with the others in the top fight getting effectively a cheap pit stop, demoting Sergio down. Nothing he could have done about that. Let's analyse what happened, how it played out. What an amazing afternoon of racing, or evening of racing that was, with Alex Kalanorkas and Jess McFadden. And I know it's early stages of the season, but we saw Charles Leclerc pulling on alongside Max Verstappen after they finished the race, giving him the thumbs up, and in the podium and interviews afterwards, lots of love shared between them, saying they enjoyed the tough but fair battle between them. A relationship there that we hope stays positive throughout the season. And talking relationships, our sponsor of the podcast, once again, are our friends at BetterHelp Online Therapy. Relationships take work. A lot of us will drop anything to help somebody else and somebody we care about. But how often do you care about yourself, that important relationship where you look after yourself? Stick around halfway through the podcast today. I'll tell you about our offer with our sponsors, BetterHelp, and what we're doing with them this week. Make sure you keep listening. So, guys, I'll start with Alex. New rules, new cars. Seems to be working out all right then. Or have we just been lucky for a couple of races? That was a fantastic, fantastic couple of hours to spend for any racing fan watching today, wasn't it?
It certainly was, Martin. But I'm glad you've come to me first, because I've got to pick you up on something you said on last night's podcast, which I listened to because I'm a diligent colleague.
Sorry to hear that. I mean, someone's got to.
apparently, I live in a palatial bedsit.
Oh, you heard that.
I did hear that, yeah. I thought that was quite an interesting description of my one-bedroom flat in northeast London. I can happily report that it sits between palatial and bedsit. It is neither of those things. A charming one bed flat. I think that would be the description we'll go for. But no, that amused me greatly when I heard that. But yeah, what a race. I mean, it was very, very interesting. As you say about Sergio Perez, very, very unlucky with the timing of his stop. I think he was starting to struggle with his tyres. I think it looks like if you just hear the one radio message from Ferrari, it kind of looks like Red Bull got dummied into making that stop. But effectively what Ferrari had done is do the opposite. Like there's no point pitting on the same lap as the car in front of you. You're definitely going to lose out, or well, it's just going to stay the same. Effectively you're gambling on pit stops going wrong, and they don't tend to do that often at Red Bull. So yeah, he was very unfortunate with the timing of the safety car, although Red Bull, let's face it, I mean, they still must be riding the high of the safety car they got in Abu Dhabi, so I don't think they can have too many complaints on that front. And then the team won the race anyway with Max Verstappen. But yeah, as you say, Martin, it's the key thing here is the battle. Once again, a thrilling fight between Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc. And I think I think we're now getting enough evidence to say that yes, these rule changes have really helped. They can follow each other. They can pull off overtakes they weren't able to last year. But it's interesting. Verstappen says it's less to do with the design of the cars and it's more to do with how the tyres behave, which I know some people go, oh my God, it's still Formula One talking about tyres. They are just absolutely critical to the outcome of qualifying performances. That's why, you know, Verstappen not necessarily getting the most out of things in both Bahrain and here in Saudi Arabia. But he seems to be thinking that's what's making the battles so exciting. But what I really enjoyed was it's not, you know, there was sort of a sense last year, a correct sense, that it was Verstappen being over the top the majority of the time, going up against Lewis Hamilton, who was choosing not to have accidents. What would happen if Verstappen tried that against another younger rival? And Charles Leclerc, I mean, I've always rated him since I covered him in Formula 2. He's a phenomenal driver and showing that he can really, really do it wheel to wheel. So yeah, we're starting to see evidence that it is the cars, it is the new regs. Obviously the change to the 18-inch wheels is gonna help that. You know, he's gonna help, it's part of the package of changes. So yeah, as you say, a fantastic racing spectacle.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is why we watch Formula 1, right? We want to see racing. So they're delivered, which is great and kind of very much aligned with what Alex has just said. But for me, I think, building on what Alex said and kind of hinting at what you were suggesting there, Martin, it was what I really enjoyed was how clever the racing was. I think from everything was, it wasn't just about who's got the fastest car or, you know, where the top teams today were finding the advantages and the disadvantages and using that against one another. It was about the fact that they were cleverly using DRS and kind of playing mind games at 200 miles an hour, which I just still find extremely impressive, the fact that they can do that. And I know that might sound like a really obvious thing to say, but they're not just knuckleheads with fast cars. They're having to think really strategically. And even as Alex said, you know, there was no way that Leclerc was going to, well, he could have gone into the pits and maybe had a go at the fact that maybe they'd have been closer out on track. But I think you're totally right. Like, you're usually at a disadvantage by doing that. So I think that dummy, which he did say after the race in the press pen that it was a dummy, that they were trying to get Red Bull to blink, you know, that's clever. And then the use of the DRS and understanding how powerful it was, to be able to, we saw hints of it last time out in Bahrain. We saw the hints of, like, if you can hold back and get the DRS, then you have the advantage in the next phase of the circuit. So I'm really enjoying that, because I think it's you know, not to say that people haven't been clever before. We've seen it with the likes of, I forget what year it was, but Vettel at Spa, knowing that he could get the jump on Hamilton if he. You know, maneuvered the car in a certain way. Like, we're used to seeing this kind of stuff, but I feel like it's really becoming almost like a characteristic of Charles's driving style. And I think what really impressed me again today was that I thought that Max actually was being outwitted. And I think the thing that I felt maybe was that we know how he can get quite hot-headed. I thought he was going to make a mistake because he was getting so frustrated at the fact that he was making the move and then getting outdone again. But actually what we saw was that Max started then playing Charles's game. And I think that was, for me, not to say that he is an immature driver. I think he's a very, how to put this politically correct without people coming for me on Twitter. He's an aggressive driver. We know that. And I think
our boss Kevin Turner, yeah, chief editor, comes under a lot of stick from people who, because he says Max Verstappen's not the complete package. He's almost there. He just needs patience and a bit more, you know, less ferocity in wheel-to-wheel action. And so by the sounds of it, what you're saying is, you know what, this season, maybe Max is, now he's got the world championship under his belt. He's had some time off over winter. He's kind of come back. No one's ever saying he didn't have guile, but that's just another bit of his talent that he's been able to layer on top. It's really impressive.
100%. And I think what I really enjoy is that these drivers have to adapt in terms of who they're battling against, like who the battle's with. And I think that's what I felt when I was watching, was that that's what we were seeing with Max. It's like he knows where he can apply pressure and where he needs to change his game. And I think we're seeing that more and more as he goes through his career. He decided, I'm not going to win the aggression game with Charles, because Charles doesn't seem to blink when it comes to Max. I think he kind of knows, right, well, if you send it, then we're both out, so you're going to hurt, because at this point in time, you're trailing. You don't have any points. So it's kind of, you know, up to you, really, if you want us both to crash. But then Max decided, no, okay, I'll play the clever game then. And I think we've seen that, you know, he knew how to play Lewis. He knows how to play Charles. So I think, you know, that's going to be something that, as we move through the season, is this still going to be a narrative that's going to make its way through the season? But I guess I did see on Twitter people kind of not actually liking the DRS chess, as I was like referring to it as, like, is it a bit kind of manufactured? And I know that people have a problem with DRS in the first place, but for me it just showed like this is a tool that the drivers can use, and they were using it cleverly. So, I don't know, like, I didn't particularly mind it, but I'd be interested to know what you guys thought.
Well, the thing is about the DRS tactical tool versus farce thing is that it only becomes a farce if it's the same every race. So if at every race there's a really strong DRS and it becomes a game of who can drive slowest before some paint on a track, then it's going to become a farce and it's going to become dangerous. And, you know, although last year we saw Lewis running into the back of Max, we went out without incident today. And and I thought it was interesting because they were locking up and not looking like the complete professional racing driver that always got it totally under control. Although, to be honest, the cars do look a handful this year. Sorry, Alex, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, all I was going to say is that I don't think you have that battle without DRS. I think that there's two things. It's one, it's not like it was 50 laps of DRS passing. It was a certain specific point in the race where it happened. But without it, I don't think Verstappen wins that race. I think he gets close enough to make one move. And it's brilliant. I get frustrated when people like, you know, in an ideal world, yeah, you wouldn't have DRS, but people do look back 20 years ago and yearn for that era that's always on the cusp of like, oh, it was better back then. Well, which era are you talking about? You're talking about, you know, Jim Clark, you're talking about Emerson Fittipaldi, Michael Schumacher. What do you mean? It's always the same thing, right? But those races were, people remember those amazing key moments, but it was just tended to be just one. It wasn't necessarily constant wheel-to-wheel fighting. I think with this DRS, it's the same in Bahrain. It wasn't going to go on forever, and it was the same here. It just worked for that period of time. And they're so clever the way they were using it. You know, Max adapted his approach. I think, Jess, you're right. He does seem to be sort of, he has changed, or the early evidence suggests he is sort of playing the longer game. That really was evident today, because he had to wait until later on in the stint, because that was just the way it played out with the tyres. And he said he knew that. I think he was a bit like, right, I can't do my usual thing of go all out on the attack early on. He waited, he bided his time, he realised what Leclerc was doing in terms of using the second DRS to get back. So he was like, no, right, you're not doing that again. And what was brilliant was Leclerc immediately recognised that. So they both lock up, Leclerc hits on the gas and just heads off. It's like the peripheral vision, like, you know that helmet cam? You saw Leclerc in Bahrain going left, right, left, right, left. How on earth they see anything is tremendous. Just the spatial awareness to know what your rival's doing. You're listening, you're feeling, you're hearing. It's just tremendous stuff there. But yeah, so I think people complain. If you're complaining about that, I mean, are you ever going to enjoy Formula One if that's what you're complaining about? Like, you know, yeah.
Mm. A couple of things that I loved about today was, firstly, the two teams set their cars up differently. So you had that top end pace from Red Bull, and then you had the Ferrari that could pull away in Sector 1. In the race, it was Max that topped out the speed trap at 334.6 kilometres an hour. Bottom of the 18 runners that ran was Ferrari. Carlos Sainz, 318, and then slightly above him in 16th, Charles was at 320. So there's, you know, you've got an offset there of 14 kilometres an hour, and then layer on top the slipstream, then layer on top the DRS, and there was just that offset that made great racing. And this new rule set and new cars, where different teams, not only they look different visually, the bits that we can see, they're setting their cars up differently. But Alex, let me ask you, you're going to be flying out to Melbourne in a couple of weeks' time. Well, flying before 2 weeks'
time. It's a week today, yeah.
Yeah, right? Experiment, Melbourne, no DRS. Like, would that shut up the...
Everybody, don't wake up for the race.
would that stop the doubters, right? So, but would that stop the doubters? Would there be a terrible Melbourne race? It's not been on the calendar for two years.
I don't think that's a fair circuit to test this out on, because holy moly.
It would stop. How about we just do it for one
race? I like the idea of experiment, Martin, but please can we not do it at Albert Park? Because I think that's like RIP F1, I think. So, like,
just saying.
I think there's two things there, and one is to live so relentlessly in the real world, but you can't just have one race run to different rules. Is that I got annoyed about that with the sprint races last year? It's like,
yeah,
have them, fine, experiment with race weekend format, don't have them count for championship points, because that's just not fair, really. And it would be the same with Melbourne. But I think the bigger problem is you would have one very boring race. They've done a lot of track changes, they've invested a lot of money, that great organisation, the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, I know they're really, really looking forward to having the race back. I know they've had to cap ticket numbers, I'm fairly sure, just because they just can't get the number of officials and the way things are, you know, going to be managed with the COVID rules and things like that. Phenomenal race, I'm thoroughly looking forward to going back there. But yeah, I just don't think having DRS would work out. But I think what's really interesting is that, don't forget, I think the way they reach those speeds are completely different. So the Ferrari hybrid upgrade they introduced at the end of last year packs one hell of a punch. So they accelerate off the corners really, really, really fast. The Red Bull has a much lower drag philosophy, so it is able to hit a higher top speed, but the Ferrari can get to its top speed quicker. So it balances it out quite nicely. I do, however, suspect that if the Red Bulls were to lock out the front row, I don't think Ferrari would see them by the finish. I think it's clearly a slightly peakier car, or Red Bull just operationally. We saw that last year when it came to getting the best out of the tyres in what I still maintain was the fastest package last year. They're not necessarily 100% all over it, but I do suspect they have just a fundamentally stronger package all round. So if it were to be Red Bull start in front, I think DRS or no DRS, I still think Red Bull wins that fight.
Yeah, I think Perez was on for the win today, really, if he hadn't have been absolutely scuppered by Latifi's crash. Latifi giveth, but he also taketh away, I think, in the case of Red Bull.
It had been a whole 24 hours since he'd binned it into the wall, so he was due a crash.
He is having a bit of a shocker of a season. You've got Albon coming in alongside him on a year out, and with the greatest of respect to Albon, who is a phenomenal racing driver, he isn't George Russell, and yet he's not having the problems that Latifi's having. It is a difficult package. Obviously, it's not where Williams wants it to be. But yeah, struggles in your third year for Nicholas Latifi, that's a bit difficult. Just very quickly on Sergio Perez. Jess, I don't know. I have a sneaking suspicion. His tyres did seem to be going off just a little bit towards that stint. Leclerc was coming back to him. Christian Horner says, yeah, that was the lap they were already planning on pitting. So strategically, they didn't lose out. They were obviously just completely screwed over by the safety car. But I wonder whether Leclerc would have been able to get him towards the end of the race, and then the amount of time, like, I'm sure Max would have been just waved by. I wonder whether that in itself would have meant that Leclerc just drives away and just about holds on. I'm not really sure. I think sort of the safety car ultimately did destroy Perez's race, but it also might have saved Verstappen's race, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, we just all never know, will we? It's always going to be a what if. But I mean, I was looking forward to seeing if the Mexican Minister of Defense was still kicking, because that was my biggest criticism of him last year, was like, where the hell was this for the whole season? Like, I know it was a lot was riding on that, and he really, like, brought out the absolute, you know, defense masterclass. But I was kind of looking forward to seeing that, and we didn't get to see it, and it was just a bit of like, oh, okay. But I mean, doesn't matter, because we still got a cracking race regardless. It's just one of those things. But yeah, it would have been interesting to see if how that would have strategically played out. But we just had a different strategic play out. So
and I think,
you know,
it,
don't feel
well,
too bereft.
Just, I think as well, just quickly with Perez, at least he was on pole. Like I criticised him quite heavily last week. I think as you mentioned, Kevin Turner earlier, I think he was sort of arguing that I should have given him a higher rating in the driver ratings. And I was like, well, he did get bullied off the road by Hamilton and he let a Haas by, and that, you know, he was absent from the lead fight. And if he'd been in there, I think, okay, it doesn't matter, as you say, Jess, because of the way the race ended with the Red Bulls retiring. But he did let Red Bull down by not being there. Here today, totally done over by circumstances, but he was doing the better job than Max because he got it on pole position. So, you know, I take my hat off to him there. Credit where credit is due. Great weekend from Perez.
Yeah, I think we missed out on a team orders scenario that I think would have added some spice to it today, because after the horror that was watching the end, you know, both sets of fans at the end of last year, after a winter off, I'm currently quite enjoying the Lewis versus Max, because although Lewis hasn't been in the fight really, they're still starting to go at each other now, but it's not as mean and horrible, so I'm quite enjoying it at this stage. And I know that I won't, and I'll regret saying this on the podcast so early in the season, but I was wondering whether team orders would come into play, and then you get that whole kind of, oh well, Max was only able to do this because he's got a teammate that can pull over and let him aside, but we never saw that. Max Verstappen, of course, getting the win.
Surely not this early in the season. I
think if you're Red Bull, you do it. If you genuinely think you're in a fight with Ferrari, you have to do it, because I get quite a lot of stick for being on a downer about Perez, and I think he's a really great guy and I do rate so many of the things he's done, but he just isn't Max Verstappen. I don't think he's going to be, I could be completely wrong, fine. I just don't think he's going to consistently be able to do this weekend. And if it comes down to, as we saw last year, the last lap of the race for the points, Red Bull will be silly not to back one driver, and that team is Max's team.
But are you really going to kill the morale of the guy that needs to give you the Constructors Championship as well?
No, I see that.
Are you going to destroy him on race two? Because that would be, if I was like, I think, if we've been talking about the psychological games of Formula One, right? That, I think, would be a poor team choice. I totally agree with you. Back Max Verstappen. Back him for getting, like, basically dragging your team through to the the constructors' title, and obviously probably better chance of getting the driver's title too. But don't kill your second driver on, because I mean, look, I think we saw that happen with Bottas, right? Like, we saw how his morale was kind of beaten by having to let Lewis through, and we're talking about latter stages of the season when we kind of know you have a mathematical chance of winning, but the realistic version of that is probably that you're not in it. So I agree with you, but I can't imagine that would be the right team choice to do. It would be to kind of, yeah, no, destroy Paris.
We were denied. We were denied that today, though, weren't we? So
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
So we've talked about the top three. Sergio Perez fourth, George Russell, just for our listeners, how long are we in? 20 minutes in, I haven't done the top 10. George Russell fifth, Esteban Ocon sixth. Great result for Alpine, great result for McLaren. Well, we'll get onto that in a minute, actually, because it looks like a great result at seventh, but there were some retirements that kind of flattered that. Pierre Gasly in eighth, Kevin Magnussen, which is a great result, in ninth, driving a Haas, and Lewis Hamilton in 10th. There were 12 runners on the lead lap, I think, by the look of it, and 14 finishers, and I think the race kind of happened in three different phases. Let's kind of go through that, actually. So there was that first phase before the first safety car, which was Latifi's crash, double waved yellows, virtual safety car, full safety car. So Perez gets off the line, he does what he needs to do. Verstappen gets past Sainz, does what he needs to do. Kevin Magnussen gains a place at the beginning. Hamilton is up to 14th after the first lap. George Russell gets Ocon around lap 4, and then you get that lap 7, 8, 9 section of the race. I think I'm right in saying that was the Alpine battle, and for me that was the early highlight. So let's talk about that for a little bit, because it was Alonso and Ocon really going at it. I think Ocon did maybe squeeze Alonso on the straights a little. Mind you, it was kind of a late move, but It wasn't, I don't think it's dangerous. And then when Alonso finally gets past him, a little payback and a little nudge on turn two just to say, hey, I'm past you, and a sort of a little swerve into the wall. But that was fantastic, letting the drivers do battle. And of course, Alonso would go on to retire, unfortunately, with... I've not actually looked at the reason. I've not seen the team statement afterwards.
They haven't said what it is. They don't know what it is at this point. Okay. Which,
He was cruising around at 70 miles an hour. There was a display saying, cool the car or car cooling, and that was a real shame that we lost Fernando after 35 Fernando Alonso after 35 laps. But that battle I loved seeing, and they got loads of TV coverage as well for their sponsors, so you know, everyone's a winner. It was great seeing them race.
I think
there's a massive butt coming.
No, I think if I'm putting my team manager hat on, it hurt them. It really hurt them. I mean, we saw that they got, you know, swallowed up by Bottas taking advantage of the fact that they were having a scrap together and they lost out on a lot of time. And I think it was good to see. And I do agree with the ethos of, you know, the second race in, kind of linked to what I was talking about with Max and Perez. You know, fine, have a bit of a Barney. But I think it went on just for a little bit too long. Yeah, I think so. I'm all for racing. I'm all for letting them race. But again, like tactically for them, I think it wasn't maybe smart. But hey, we were entertained. We know Ocon can be a bit heavy-handed in wheel-to-wheel battles. So I think he was pretty lucky that he had someone like Fernando Alonso on the other end of it. Although I don't know if he is. Maybe he's absolutely going to get destroyed by off track. But hey, I mean, racing's racing, right? So I enjoyed it. And then it kind of like after... So how long did it go on? For like four laps, maybe more?
It's like three different or four phases. Laps until...
Probably like maybe one lap too long.
Until Ocon was told to hold position. And because Ocon was challenging Alonso and getting DRS, and then Bottas, because you're right, it was hurting both of them. And so Bottas had kind of cruised up behind them at that point, and then he was told to hold position. And then on the next DRS opportunity on the straight, Bottas got past, and Ocon's on the radio saying, well, that was mismanaged. Alex, let's play fantasy team manager. What do you do in that situation?
Right now, you have a word with Esteban Ocon for the next race to say, do not fight your teammate like that. Like, I fully agree with Jess. Really excellent, entertaining thing to have seen. You don't do that to your teammate. Why did he have to drop across him so aggressively and so hard? I think you have to play the team game there and say, Fernando goes by, just work together to build a gap, then have your scrap. But at that point in the race, it's not like it was the last lap and he did end up having a drag race with Lando Norris right to the line for the second year in a row here in Saudi Arabia. Or this time he stayed ahead. But yeah, I just think Esteban needed to think a little bit more like, okay, a rival team, that moves fine, but not against your teammate when it's going to hold him up and piss him off. Let's face it. Alonso furious when he got out of the car. I bet you quite a bit of that was to do with what Ocon did to him earlier on in the race.
And actually, Kevin Magnussen had cruised up behind them as well, Jess. So
exactly.
Just to agree with you, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't just Bottas.
Yeah, it hurt them on the road. And I think the other way that, again, we've been talking about smart moves and understanding how to play a race. You know, Ocon could have made a point differently by letting his teammate through. And if he stuck on him and he didn't go flying up the road, then he would have a case to say, all right, well, he's had his shot, give me that place back and let me stay ahead. So there's different ways that you can one-up your teammate that doesn't involve shoving him into the wall on a street circuit. So I think that's kind of like, if we're going to keep it fair across the teams in terms of our assessments, I think that was a smart way to have that played. But again, that's also down to the team to manage, because these guys are alphas. They don't want to have to give up positions or, you know, just like settle for second best. Then they're not going to do that. So it's, you know, it is up to the team to manage. And we know how bad team management can go. So if I was Alpine, you'd have a plan in place for if that happens again in the season.
Okay, let's talk about the next big talking point, which was Latifi crash, full safety car. Perez had already pitted a lap earlier, so we know that dropped him down to third. And that's the talking point I'm going to come to you, Alex, to talk about, which was Ferrari double stacked because they had to. It's a bit of a cheap stop as everyone's cruising around a little bit slower. But when Sainz comes out, he is ahead by, I don't know how much because we never got a clear picture from a decent angle. Sergio Perez is coming around turn one. There's a line on the track, which is the safety car line. We saw it on TV. Sky Italia had managed to get a great shot of it, and they were showing it within a lap. Last week in Bahrain, Martin Brundle's, once again, that whole thing about the stewards, which is this thing that the commentators have always told us for forever on the TV commentary. Oh, well, they have so many more cameras. They've got CCTV and they have views that we don't have. And yet they couldn't make a quick decision. On the Sky commentary, they were saying they're going to leave it up to the teams more this year with this new way of regulating it. What's your take on that? Should it just be as simple as telling the teams, swap positions, please? Other people saying, well, actually, the rules say you can't swap positions under a safety car. You can't overtake or let someone pass. So they had to do it under racing conditions. What's your take? I understand Ferrari fans saying if you'd sorted that out earlier, then Carlos Sainz could have had a run on Max Verstappen under the restart. And that was unfair.
You can make that case. I think it would have been irrelevant because Carlos Sainz isn't at Leclerc's pace. So he would have fallen back behind Verstappen reasonably quickly. I think the outcome was correct in the end because, you know, Red Bull made the call. They're like, right, you've got to let him have that position. And I think the key thing is that the FIA are trying to get away from, it was this race last year, wasn't it? It was only 4 months ago when I was there. They are trying to get away from this, you know, the sort of bartering that went on under the red flag where it's like, oh, I can offer you this. I actually didn't have a problem with that. I thought that was actually a pretty fair way of doing things. And it's the same sort of like, it's like, well, if you, we advise you to give the place back. If not, this is going to the stewards. That was a continuation of that. It's just Michael Massey. I think it was the way he phrased it that people, you know, got annoyed by. But anyway, with this, I think, yeah, they've said to the teams, I mean, it's mainly in relation to off-track passing or, you know, moves that are on the line or on the edge. They're saying just you make your call or we'll make it for you, but we're not going to tell you either way. And I think that, in certainly in this instance, the right thing happened. I can kind of see why you'd say, oh, well, it stopped Sainz having an attack on Verstappen. But I think just all things added up, it was the right outcome. I don't think Sainz was getting any higher than third today. And I don't think Perez was probably coming back at Verstappen and Leclerc once he got behind them, or ended up behind them, rather.
I don't see a massive issue with it. It obviously caused Sainz a bit of frustration, but that's because I don't think he was quite clear on the fact of whether he was going to have that position given back to him. So I was a bit skeptical of the whole self-policing angle. I don't think we've really seen anything so far. I mean, we're only two races in, but we've not really seen anything so far that would lead me to support my fear of the fact that teams might just not do the right thing. I think maybe the fear of getting a penalty or the fear of like not knowing what the stewards are going to do, maybe that actually makes the teams play ball more. But I think that, again, like, that's just going to be something that we have to keep an eye on as we move through the season.
Are you missing FIA radio?
Yeah, 100%.
Because it was a long safety car period as well.
It was, but I think I totally understand why they've gotten rid of it, and not to keep going over it, you know, last season, but they did look like a bunch of mugs really through it. To put it lightly, you know, it just, what it showed was that sometimes that there isn't a lot of clarity, or there wasn't at that phase of race control, there wasn't a lot of clarity on certain things. And I think it's to do with the fact that F1 has a bunch of very convoluted rules that are open to interpretation. So it's actually, unfortunately, something that isn't going to go away overnight unless they tighten up those and have black and white rules. But I don't think, as a little bit like what we touched on with having DRS or not having DRS, I don't think we'll ever be satisfied in that sense. Like, I would prefer things to be more black and white, a little bit like akin to the whole track limits of the white line. Sweet. Like, we can get on board with that. And I think there does need to be a little bit more throughout F1's rule book of that happening so that we don't get those instances where on the race control radio that we're getting any kind of, well, we don't know what's going on, or actually, aren't these, like, you know, teams telling race control the rules is not a good look. If they get that under wraps, then maybe it will make an appearance again, but I think they got burned by it so much last year. It's just going to be something that we now don't have a look in anymore.
The relationship between teams and the stewards, race control, yes, at times a little fractious last year. Hopefully we cannot talk about 2021 too much and move forward. But that leads me nicely into talking about today's sponsor of the podcast. We can't make this show without our sponsors, and obviously without you listening. And if you want to support our sponsors, if it's of interest to you, let me tell you about BetterHelp Online Therapy. Relationships take work. Yes, if you are on the pit wall talking to race control, that relationship takes work. But a lot of us drop anything to go help somebody else. We'll go out of our way to treat other people well. But how often do you give yourself the same treatment? You need to look after yourself. You know, a personal story. My wife is a nurse, and sometimes on a Formula One weekend, I can finish at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning with the work on the podcast and the other things that I do with the team here at Autosport. And then Monday morning rolls around and our 3-year-old baby is waking up and I need to be good dad. And my wife always says, look, you don't take care of yourself first. You can't take care of other people. That's her nursing training kicking in. Well, this month, BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to take care of your most important relationship, and that is the one you have with yourself. Whether it's different for everyone, right? Whether for you, it might be hitting the gym. Maybe it's just taking the time out to, I don't know, some personal care, go get a haircut or trying therapy. You are your greatest asset, and BetterHelp want to remind you that you need to invest the time and effort into yourself, like how you invest time into other people so much. Well, BetterHelp is an online therapy service that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with a therapist, so you haven't got to see anyone on camera if you don't want to, or you can, it's totally up to you. Much more affordable as well than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in less than 48 hours. If you give it a try, you'll see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. And the one time in my life when I needed to talk to somebody else, another professional, I've got to admit, I went into that experience thinking that I was in some way less of a man, less of a guy, in a little way, a little bit weak for not being able to work out these problems after some trauma that my family had been through. And honestly, it was the best thing I did. That person didn't make me feel small or stupid or not being able to cope. It was amazing. I highly, highly recommend it to anyone. Not just talking to the guys in the audience here, but the podcast today is sponsored by BetterHelp. And Autosport listeners of the show get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/autosport. If you want to give it a try, maybe just put the feelers out, see what it's all about. That's BetterHelp.com/autosport. All right, back to the podcast. I mentioned the sort of three phases of the race that I saw it play out today. That middle phase of the race was not a case of hold steady, because there was some action after the safety car came in. They were all on the hard tyres. There was that change of position where Sainz went back. You know, Red Bull did give the place back. We saw the first hint at the DRS battle that we've already talked about between Max and Charles, when Magnussen and Lewis Hamilton were doing the same thing around lap 23-24, where Lewis lost out the first time and then the second time wised up to it and got him. And then around lap 35-36 or so, we had this kind of coincidental trio of failures. Daniel Ricciardo's McLaren, Fernando Alonso, which we've touched on, and Valtteri Bottas in the Alfa Romeo, which is a real shame because he was having a great day, all breaking down. And because of the locations, certainly of Alonso and Daniel Ricciardo having to close the pit lane entry, and that particularly hurt Lewis Hamilton, who at that point had been on his original hard tyres, had made his way up to, what was that, sixth, because he was running behind George Russell, his teammate. And so at that point, if Lewis could have come in, if pit lane entry wasn't closed, again, he could have got a cheap stop and it would have been a different result for him. And then we get into the final phase of the race, which I think we kind of talked about first, because that was all the main action to talk about. Alex, anything else you want to cover off from kind of the main part of the stuff that we've talked about so far before we go into individual drivers?
Yeah, I think this may cover off one of those in particular. But as you say about Lewis Hamilton being on his starting tyres, Kevin Magnussen was also on the hard tyres, and both of them, well, Magnussen says it outright, the nightmare scenario for that strategy was a safety car on around lap 16. It was like you are totally screwed by that point, because you can't make the medium tyres last to the end at the pace that they need to go to. So it was all in hope for the best from that point. And Hamilton actually ends up getting screwed twice by the timing of the VSC, because Magnussen was able to come in. He was okay the second time around when it came to the VSC. But with Lewis, it would have been advantageous to pit under the VSC, but the pit lane was closed, so he was screwed either way. So yeah, unfortunate. It had sort of shades of 2020 Italian Grand Prix, but obviously this time Lewis saw the boards, you know, they heard the messages. It was quite the replay, you know, the radio message, it sounded like it was on the, I've not gone back and watched the onboard, but it looked like I've got to make a decision at 200 miles an hour here. Too far on the edge. But yeah, so as we sort of said earlier, that the safety car, the VSC, they giveth and they taketh away. That is ultimately what happened there.
All right, look, there's a few drivers that I want to get into, Jess. And the first one, I think we've covered off Max and Charles pretty well, but is Carlos Sainz. I want your opinion on his season so far. Two podiums, absolutely fantastic. Out of the box, Ferrari are competitive. A real sleeping giant has woken up. And yet I can't help but feel he's been so close to something greater. He couldn't improve on his second run pace in qualifying. He couldn't get to the standard of his teammate. He couldn't match Max. And yet I feel so bad offering any critique of Carlos Sainz because two races in, two podiums, he's doing very well. Thank you very much. I'll take that. What's your take on how he's performed?
He's come away both times from both races, even though he's on the podium, extremely disappointed. I mean, again, he
it's
doesn't...
It's so strange to see, right? He's down about the result.
He's almost miserable.
Maybe we can take, at this stage in the season, we can take that as a positive. Because if he's seeing P2 as, like, we have to go away and learn, which is obviously a driver's favourite line to say when they don't quite get the result that they want, I want him straight up there in the title fight. I think, you know, I've been a massive fan of Carlos Sainz for a long time now. I think he's very consistent, he's very steady, he's very skilled, and I think he does deserve to be at least in the mix. But again, you've got people like Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen, and they just seem to have this like little extra something which makes them slightly untouchable. Now, I'm sure there are going to be opportunities that Carlos will seize the moment. He's very good at seizing opportunity. And I think that's, you know, we're only two races in. So I'm sure that he will get his time to shine this season if that Ferrari stays competitive, which I think it probably will. But yeah, he's not shone yet. And I'm sure Alex has maybe got a bit more analysis as to why that might be. But I'm staying fairly optimistic, but I don't know if he's quite got that extra bit to beat his teammate. And that's quite tough. I think they're such a good pairing. They're so strong, but it's a little bit like, you know, if Lewis Hamilton's your teammate, you might be a really good driver, but you're probably not going to be, you know, the star.
And also Leclerc is Ferrari family, right? It's, you know, he would bleed Ferrari. So there's also that he's coming into a team where there's clearly someone who is not at the Schumacher level yet of moulding a team around completely around themselves, but I can see the way that's going for Leclerc.
The sort of downer mood that he's in is a reflection of Ferrari's in this title hunt. It is real. We're going to be fighting for wins at every race. This is my chance. And blowing it is too strong a phrase, but he knows he's not at Leclerc's level. Basically, what's happening is he's not confident with the car, particularly when it comes to rear handling. He's not gelling with it to this point. And it's almost like when the fuel comes out in qualifying, it masks it. Because he's such a fast driver, Carlos Sainz Jr. Like one of our former Autosport colleagues was like, oh, I don't rate him because he wasn't very good in British F3. And I was like, okay, that's one thing. But did you see how good he was against Verstappen when they were at Toro Rosso? Like, he's really quick. He's really good. And obviously you see that again in qualifying. When the fuel's out, he's just able to grab the car and take it, and pushing Leclerc, who is one of the fastest drivers. Like, he's up there with Hamilton and Verstappen on one lap pace. So Sainz is a very quick driver. But when the fuel goes in and it comes to those long runs, the lack of confidence, the sort of the extra sliding and the harder wear that puts on the tyres, it just exacerbates it. And that's why, even though, you know, we had a safety car and everything got compressed again, he's still, you know, nearly 10 seconds off the lead come the finish, plus the fact that they were massively holding each other up by fighting each other. He would have been even further behind if it just, you know, run to the flag with either one of Verstappen or Leclerc winning out. So yeah, it's I think he'll get there, but it's almost like the Mercedes package overall. All the pieces are there. It's like, it's just how long will it take to get on top of it? And by that point, is he out of the title fight? So you can tell he's worried because he needs to get on top of it quickly.
We'll talk about somebody else who I was going to ask you, will he ever get there? But we'll come to that driver later in the podcast. I guess you run the risk as well, Alex, of the more that Leclerc dominates, like Max dominates, and then has a teammate that will pick up results as and when, that's good for a title battle, good for us to watch, can be, you know, good for the team as well, the Constructors' Championship. You've got two strong drivers. I guess on the other hand, if he does get it together, if he can work out how to get this car performing when it's heavy on the long run pace, and that takes points away from his teammate, and you're against a team like Red Bull, which is so clearly a one-driver team, sorry, Sergio, but it is, that gives a bit of an easier run to this year's title championship for Max Verstappen, doesn't it? If they start to become more equal.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. I think, I think with Ferrari, I think they'd just say, oh, considering the last 2 years of hell we've been in, we'll take the problem of having to decide which one of them wins or whatever.
Right, yeah.
But that is why Red Bull are made stronger by the fact that they just go, yeah, Max is our guy because we know he can deliver. And I'm just to go back way back when we were talking about Sergio Perez, Jess, you're completely right in my take of like, just put him behind on the second race of the season. I forgot that he's a human being. I think we do that too often on the internet and things like that. And of course he would destroy his morale. So no, that was the completely bigger picture view was the correct one there. I think he'll get there. It's just my bigger worry if I'm Ferrari is that Red Bull start getting on top of the tyres. They start qualifying at the front and they just develop away from them. Because I think if you look at Ferrari today, when it came to those, they were going to gain massively under the safety car, but they still could not afford to have a pit stop go wrong or Verstappen was going to go past them. I think what you've really seen from Ferrari is that they're a really slick operation now. You know, they've learned from the pain of the last couple of years. They've built back all that stuff that all the teams say, and it's usually PR guff of just like, we learn from our adversity, we learn from bad times. Well, there is a grain of truth. It just gets repetitive hearing it all the time is what I'm complaining about. But there is truth in there, and they are nailing the high pressure situations. Like you saw it in Bahrain, they needed those pit stops to go right, and they did. So with Ferrari, I think they can take the good points from that. They know they're doing it. The pressure's now on is, can Ferrari stay with Red Bull, which we know can develop over the course of the season? That's the bigger test for Ferrari, and I think they need to concentrate on acing that rather than worrying about their drivers fighting each other.
And how confident, Alex, are you of them doing it? We're in a budget cap world right now, and Ferrari is a team that for a couple of years has been off the pace, but that doesn't mean they haven't got people who are in a world championship winning team, right? They are absolute top level team. They've just not been able to show it. The people are good enough. How is that battle going to play out? Because we're in the early stages of a new rule set right now, and any developments they bring to the car are probably going to have a bigger incremental change than last year when we're working under mature rules. So how do you see Red Bull versus Ferrari in that development race?
So I think recent history is not on Ferrari's side. I think you've got to look at seasons like 2018 when they had the fastest car at the start of the season and they just couldn't stay with Mercedes, and then you got into a fight where Lewis Hamilton's brilliance just made the difference and it blew Sebastian Vettel out of the water. Having said that, it goes back to what I said before. They've learned from the last 2 years of the bad times. That they just look like a better operation altogether. So I would take confidence from that. But I think the key thing is the other rule change that Formula One has only introduced, I think, what was it, for the start of last year? It's the very, very, very minor form of performance balancing that they've got in terms of the aero and CFD allowance. So Mercedes is allowed to run, or can only run 90% of those, or can run those tools for 90% of the time of what they were allowed in 2020. Haas can run at 110%. Up until halfway through the season when it gets switched and it's based on the order of the Constructors' Championship from then. So Ferrari, by finishing third last year, will have a little bit more than Red Bull. Not much, but it can still make benefit of that. I think it has used its extra time that it did last year for full effect. But what's really interesting is that the concepts are so different that I think both teams are going to go, we've got low-hanging fruit, and then we're going to be able to see which is the definitive package. I still think Red Bull has the edge, as I've sort of consistently said. I know that's a bit of a non-committal fence-sitting Jake Box or leg answer, but I think he won't mind me saying that. I don't know. He probably will, actually, now that I think about it, but I don't care. I think, yeah, there's both good and sort of worrying signs that Ferrari have got to overcome on that front.
Sure, sure. Okay, right, Jess, I want to hear your thoughts on Mercedes. George Russell said before the race, on merit, if he finished fifth, he would be delighted, or, you know, words to that effect. He was aiming for fifth, and he did indeed finish fifth. A bit of a lonely fifth as well, and a bit of an anonymous race for George Russell. Doesn't mean to say that he didn't drive a good race today. Lewis Hamilton working his way up to 10th. At one point was running behind his teammate, but again, that's before he'd stopped, and we've discussed that Lewis was unlucky with the stops. But generally on Mercedes, we're two races in now. We've got a 2-week break before Melbourne, but of course these flyaway races, again, it is more difficult but not impossible to bring major upgrades. And again, in a budget cap world, Jess, I just can't wait to hear your thoughts on Mercedes now. We've got a bit of a steer on where they are.
It's painful, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I'm sure it is for them. Yeah, it's not looking great. But I think we knew that straight away after Bahrain, that, you know, they weren't going to come to Jeddah, which is completely different from, you know, all the other tracks that we've got going on this season, and to have found the magic fix in a week. So I think actually fifth for them was pretty good. So Lewis, obviously, we've touched on a bit unlucky, but he did climb a few places on the road, so I think that is certain positive things. But he was outdone by a Haas, which is not so
certainly was
not so fun. So yeah, I think they've got a lot to they've said it consistently. They're not ready. They can't get the concept working quite as well as they want to. It's going to have to be something that they are continually trying to do throughout the season. But obviously, they're limited in what they can do. So. George seems so despondent. Like, it's actually really quite tough to watch him in, like, the TV pens now, because it's just like, he thought this was his moment. He thought this season was going to be the season when he could be in the championship fight, having sat, I'm going to put patiently in inverted commas, because I don't think he was very patient at all.
Certainly not at Imola last year, was he?
No, exactly. So, you know, he's done three seasons at a Backmarker team. He's now graduated to top tier, and they don't have the package for him to deliver. But, you know, I think you can't discount Mercedes, but I think also there's got to be a level of realism as to whether or not they're going to be there. Like, can they do it? Can they fundamentally change and fix the car in a season? That's a tough ask. So I don't think they're going to be there this season. And I think it's just going to have to be one of those times where the question's going to continually be asked throughout the season, no doubt. But I think this is going to be a pain season. I talked about pain races, but I don't know how quickly they're going to be able to fix the problems that they've got and get the concept working. But they've been really radical. But realism for me is saying they're not going to be in it this season, and maybe they're just going to have to hope that next season they have something that works. But I don't know how quickly Alex thinks that maybe they can get that turn around.
Well, I'm famously an optimist. I mean, I'm not, but I think Mercedes could do it. I think that engineering team, with what they've got, they've gone down that route because they see potential in it. Once they can solve the porpoising problem and they're able to run the car lower, they will get there. It's just a question of how long will that take? Will it take 5 more races? Will it take 10 more races? I have faith in Mercedes, and I think a resurgent Mercedes in the fight with a driver like Lewis Hamilton, with an up-and-comer like George Russell, what a story that would be, taking on Ferrari and Red Bull. I would love to see it. It's probably more what I'm getting at. But I just think, to come back to Russell, I was so impressed by him this weekend. Like,
yeah,
what happened yesterday in qualifying, where basically Mercedes said to, or Hamilton and Mercedes and his engineering team, went, right, we're going to go with this. We have no other hope. Let's go with this extreme setup and just see what happens. And it backfired massively. Well, you have to put a good chunk of the blame on Lewis there, but he's got credit in the bank because he's Lewis Hamilton. He's the greatest Formula One driver of all time. Fair play. Didn't work. You know, it's a hiding to nothing because the car is so far out of the performance pace at the moment. Russell was just like, okay, this is what I got. And he delivered it. You know, yeah, out-qualified by the Alpine, but he got him straight away at the start of the race. And I just thought it was important for Russell to do that, because I saw he got a bit of stick like after, you know, qualifying behind Bottas in Bahrain. I thought, well, again, he just tried something and it backfired on him in a car that you have to try things. Otherwise, you're just going to end up
where you are. It's going to happen though, isn't it? People are going to throw that in his face like whenever they can because they love the drama of it.
Which is fair, but I did think it was a bit like, nah, I think it's a bit like, do you remember when Leclerc was promoted to F1 with Sauber and he spun in Bahrain in qualifying and everyone was like, oh, I guess he's not that highly rated. It was like, well, three races later in Baku, he's fifth in a Sauber or whatever it was. Like these guys are highly rated for a reason. And I just think with Russell, he's showing his class. And particularly this weekend, given all the off-track stuff, he's the only GPDA director on site with Vettel being absent. Alex Wirtz wasn't there, the chairman. So it is painful to see him in those media pens, but he's also a sort of, he's an old head on young shoulders. You know what I mean? He's almost sort of wise beyond his years. But at the very least, he can look back on this weekend, and I think from driving perspective, absolutely brilliant.
And he is certainly used to driving a car that is not just going to immediately put you on pole and just steam away into the lead. As much as he might have wanted to step into that car this year, he is used to driving around problems and outperforming the car. And not saying that's a good thing for him, but at least he's used to that with Williams. And unfortunately for him, it continues this year, and we hope that that he gets a smile back on his face as soon as possible. Alpine, I think, you know, although Alonso retired, Esteban Ocon recovering to sixth, I think they should be pretty happy with their weekend and how they've started. Alex, how are you feeling about the midfield battle at the moment? And when you look at the times between Alpine, McLaren, and we will get onto at one point, Ricciardo was running last again, but he did do a very early stop. So I will correct myself before anyone thinks that I'm criticising him unjustly. But the same as Bahrain, like he's been last in both races and worked his way up. So McLaren are really struggling. AlphaTauri in their Alfa Romeo, I think, have got some reasons to be happy. But ultimately, Haas as well, and you look at, you know, they're running one car. Kevin Magnussen got 18 days notice and he's beating Lewis Hamilton and in, you know, the second race of the year. So that midfield, Alex, as it's shaking out, how are you feeling about what you're going to go and see in Melbourne in 2 weeks?
Oh, very excited. I sort of, looking back on testing, I was both completely correct and completely incorrect of my assessment of the midfield.
It was
totally muddled up and there's no way to get an accurate order. But when you sort of, you make your educated guesses, it was like, oh yeah, McLaren really strong in Barcelona. Yep. Up and coming form team. That car looks like it's got a potential, no porpoising. Oh, it's got no downforce. Ah, okay, right. Yeah. So the brake problem really was disguising a much, much bigger issue there. So McLaren, big trouble. Alpine, you know, sort of stand out in terms of they're ahead, obviously, naturally of McLaren, but also AlphaTauri as well doesn't look to be the threat that it has been to the top tier runners in previous seasons. But the big surprise, and one thing that I kind of called it, but also I sort of quantified it in that basically Haas, I was told they could be up there as the sort of, you know, the team that is around Mercedes level or just behind it, or it could be much, much further back. It is around Mercedes level. Like, actually, I think Kevin Magnussen, while it's a great story that he's in the points again, I think he'd admit this because that's the sort of guy he is. That car probably should have been sixth. I think that if he didn't have the neck problem in qualifying, if he wasn't unfortunate with the strategy today, I think he would have been higher up. So it's both sort of good and bad. It's like, oh, he's doing an impressive job in the circumstances, but also the car is sort of like, oh, it's got such potential. So yeah, I'm really intrigued to see where Haas goes for the rest of this year. And also just knowing that team, they've been through some horrible times lately. So good for them. Finally got a package. I do think that if the Ferrari power teams are still going to be so consistently ahead of the Mercedes ones, it's all going to kick off politically, which is very interesting. That's what we like. You know, we like these stories as journalists. But yeah, and then there's, you know, Williams has got its problems and its struggles. And we're not even talking about Aston Martin. I mean, Lawrence Stroll must hate that because they're so far off the pace. They're irrelevant. You know, even when Sebastian Vettel comes back, I like to think he'll be a step ahead of Nico Hülkenberg, who is an excellent super sub, but he hasn't had the full, you know, complement of testing. Still, where's that Aston going to be? It's not going to suddenly be fighting for the higher end of the points positions. And for a team that Lawrence Stroll has said, I want to win world championships with it, to be an irrelevance, I'm sure they're really reeling about that. And it's unfortunate to see, but it does. That is just the game, isn't it? Someone's got to lose.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Yeah, completely. Jess, how are you feeling about the midfield battle?
Yeah, the fact that it's
super tight. And totally muddled up for what last year gave us in that we're seeing Haas. I still can't get used to seeing Haas so far up and fighting. And yeah, people say Ferrari B team, etc., or Ferrari power goes a long way, but I love it. I absolutely love seeing these teams make that big step up. And as they did when they entered Formula One, but people have short memories, it's just so good to see them, you know, with a reason to come out every weekend and think, right, we get some decent points here. On a wet weekend, on a lucky day, we could get a podium. So I'm loving this midfield battle.
It is. Like, in the case of Haas, it's great, but if you sacrifice an entire season, if they didn't deliver this season, why him? Really? Like, not to be, you know, I feel like Alex and I are swapping roles here. I'm usually like the eternal optimist, and Alex has a level of cynicism, and I feel like I've taken on that role, and Alex is the one saying, no, everything's great.
No, guys, what I'm like when I've had some sleep.
We found the magic ingredient.
This is
excellent.
It
excellent
this is it
awesome
no I like it it's I know, are you keeping me on my toes that I don't know what to expect from you?
Don't worry, normal then, service yeah, will so, resume soon. Like, I'm sure
especially in Australia.
Oh,
when
yeah,
you
yeah.
That whole
just
I mean
the flights
thank
there
God
alone
it's a standalone like
yeah
it's,
I know
it's, yeah but yeah
a couple of things in case our listeners turned off the TV coverage, as I'm sure nearly everybody does the minute the race is over. Some of the outstanding issues, if you're wondering about the awkward stumbling over each other of Alex Albon and Stroll, then Albon does have a three-place grid drop for Melbourne. And those investigations into possible speeding under the yellow flag at the end of the race, Carlos Sainz, Sergio Perez and Kevin Magnussen all given the all clear over that potential of ignoring the yellow flags in the closing stages of the event today. So let's look forward then. Oh, a quick look at where everyone stands then. Constructors, Ferrari 78 points, 50 points clear of Mercedes at 38 points. Red Bull just a point behind on 37 points. And then it's Alpine, Haas, Alfa Romeo, Alfa Tauri and McLaren Mercedes. Oh, that was the one question I forgot to ask you. So, Jess, I want to talk about Daniel Ricciardo. Last year, he got a pass. Right? He got a bit of a pass from journalists, from the fans, because he was getting used to a car and, you know, the last of the late breakers couldn't get his head around the, you know, a different car and braking system. It's tough to see. And he goes to his home race in 2 weeks' time as well, and he's not going to be challenging for a podium.
No, but that's Formula One,
hard.
Isn't it? Like, I think
really
like that's
hard
just
to see.
If McLaren don't have the package, then this is just going to be what it is. I mean, it is. Everyone likes Daniel Ricciardo, right? Like, there are very few people that don't like him, and we know what he can deliver. He's got that track record at least, I guess, but like, did he get a pass? I don't know. I think he's had it in the neck quite a few times. You know, he's come under a lot of criticism. You know, Netflix love to stick the dagger in a little bit as well. So I don't know if he got a pass, but we like those things don't just disappear just because we go into an off season. Right. Like, I mean, obviously, you'd hope it would because you'd get the car set up right. Or maybe like McLaren would learn a bit more about Daniel's driving style and try and adapt it slightly. But I mean, again, like there's only so much that they're going to be willing to do. Because again, that's when we talk about great drivers, some of the great drivers have been able to switch teams semi seamlessly and be able to drive whatever they're given rather than have the team or rely on the team to change the car to fit them. I wouldn't know what that's about because I'm not a racing driver, but you know, you do seem to see like that there are certain people that are able to do it. Like Carlos Sainz, I think, has been one of those people who's jumped from team to team and just very quickly picked up what it is that they are that he's handling. So yeah, it's still not looking rosy for him. I think the point was that he probably would have wanted to come into the season and had a bit more of a chance at getting the results that he was starting to at the end of last season. But the McLaren just isn't in where any of them want. I think like Lando coming home in the points at least was a good finish for them, and obviously just missed out on a spot in front of Ocon. That's something at least to come home with, slightly optimistic. But yeah, I don't, there's not really much to say from my part. There's not really much to say about Ricciardo. I think it is what it is.
The one, just very quickly, the one good thing for Ricciardo is that it's not like last year, this stage last year, where Norris was getting the really high profile results. Now, obviously, he's not going to be able to do that because McLaren doesn't have the car that's capable, but it's not like Norris is in a different stratosphere. If Bottas, Alonso don't retire and Magnussen and Hamilton are able to pit when they want, I don't think Norris is in the points. So it's not like they're in a different class, but it's the reason why Ricciardo shouldn't get a pass for what happened last year is exactly who you just named. Carlos Sainz Jr. also changed teams and didn't struggle at all. So, you know, that's an interesting factor there.
Yeah, sure. Gasly was eighth, just behind Lando Norris, and Gasly was another
Gasly,
driver.
Just something that came out after the race. He was in intense pain for the last 15 laps. He said the last 10 laps in particular were almost excruciating, and his mechanics actually had to help him out of the car once he'd stopped in park for May. He said he had a stabbing pain in his intestines, that it got worse every time he turned left, it got worse. So obviously hoping, because that sounds like appendicitis to me. Hoping that it's...
I wondered whether it was might just be extreme dehydration or something. Something's just not gone right. But yeah, oh God, that didn't sound comfortable.
So wow. Yeah, okay. For him to have actually, you know,
at least
done
he's somewhere
that.
There's yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of medical support, as everyone knows, at any Formula One round, and so he's got the best people around him to work out what's going on there, and hopefully it's something that he can, as you say, like a dehydration or something issue that's nothing more serious. Looking at the Drivers' Championship, Charles Leclerc leading with 45 points, Carlos Sainz with 33 points, Max Verstappen in third, getting obviously his first points of the year on the board with 25 points, George Russell is fourth on 22, and Lewis Hamilton somehow in fifth with 16 points, but already that gap starting.
Can I just
want
another? Another funny moment was the fact that Lewis had to ask if he got a point for 10th. He's so not used to finishing in those positions. He's like, do we even get a point?
No, that
for
can't
this?
Be true. Who said
he did?
Was that on team radio?
Yeah, so Bono came on and told him he was 10th, and Lewis was like, do we even get a point for that?
Here we go. I've come full circle now. Sorry, I don't believe for a second that Lewis Hamilton doesn't know that rule. I think that is well and truly, he's making a point. He's making
it.
A point there. He's just gone, right. Yeah, sorry. He's too clever for that. Now I've come back. I'm the cynical, miserable one again now. Normal service has resumed.
Normality is resumed. You're heading off to Melbourne in 2 weeks in time. Well, in a week's time, you're getting on the plane to go the other side of the world, for us at least. And it's been a couple of years, obviously, for listeners of the Autosport podcast who are new, and I can see the download figures, they're growing all the time. So we know we have some new listeners that are new to Autosport and listening to us. Just fill them in and fill everyone in, really, on what it was like for you. So 2 years ago, you land the role of Grand Prix editor for Autosport, a role that's been held by some legendary journalists over the years, and that is your first mission. That's your first race, right? So take it away from there.
Yeah, so I got my dream job, and then the world ended. Is the short version? Obviously not permanently, thankfully. But yeah, I had a great start to 2020 in that I was covering Formula E at the time, and we knew obviously there'd been a fair amount of staff change going into that year, and I knew what my role was going to be from quite early on in that January. So I went to Santiago for my last Formula E race with Matt Kew, who's now actually, you know, as I'm sure you introduced or we've said earlier on other podcasts about Matt joining the F1 team for this year. He came with me because he took over in Formula E, so we had a lovely holiday, and at the time we were also, because it's so far to go, I was like, you know, we've gone to the other side of the world, it's like a 15-hour flight we're having a holiday after this. Do you want to come back? He was like, yeah, great. Sounds excellent. Because that's sort of nice guy that he is. And we were filing random stories about this coronavirus thing and how it was threatening to cancel Formula E races and all the things in China. And we're like, oh, yeah, that sounds a bit inconvenient. And then obviously, as everybody knows, what massive impact it had on all of our lives. But yeah, it was a bit tough. I went all the way to Australia to do my dream job. And it was quite hard not knowing, you know, when we came back, what would happen. As we all know, Autosport magazine had to pause for a little while. Everything was so uncertain. Would Formula One itself survive? You know, a lot, you know, because of the broadcast contracts in 2020, it was able to carry on. But I was a little bit, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I spent lockdown, I live by myself. So I spent the first lockdown totally solo. So I was kind of a little bit of a prisoner with my own thoughts of, is it going to happen? But it did. And I'm very fortunate and very privileged that it did. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to getting to Melbourne, ticking that little personal box. Just to say, yeah, I've finally seen a Melbourne race, because what a great city it is. I was very fortunate to have a couple of days instead of going on to Bahrain, as the plan would have been, to see that race before I came home. Obviously, at that time, everybody didn't think that the lockdowns were going to last as long as they did. And Melbourne in particular, I know what they had, the world's longest lockdown. So it's really, really hard time for that city. So I think everybody should just look forward to this Australian Grand Prix. I think it's going to be a great spectacle. Unfortunate that the home driver, as we've said, isn't going to be in win contention, but just celebrate, because this is what life is all about. Like, I think the last 2 years have taught us nothing. It's that people really care about these events, you know, sporting events, music events, the theatre. Life is for living. So just enjoy it. Just enjoy it. And that's going to be my plan. When I get on that plane in a week's time. Thank you for letting me rant on about my life there. That was nice.
No, it's not a rant at all. It's a fascinating story about, you know, obviously there's people had much bigger problems than what we went through. But it was always a very interesting story, that a very personal story to you, that you finally got that dream job, and it's Friday or it's Thursday in Melbourne, whatever day it was. I remember being back at the office in Richmond, and just saw these calls going back and forth with you and the management, and you know, how do we keep our staff safe, and do we bring you all home immediately, and what's going on? And it was a strange time, and I'm glad it's behind us. Ticket sales have been high for the Melbourne Grand Prix, but they won't be a record on the day of the event, because they are limiting them. And it might well be a record over the course of the weekend, but there were some, I think what they're struggling with in the area are labour shortages, which was seen at a recent sporting event and where there were these huge queues at, you know, the burger and hot dog stands and things like that. And so they have decided to not do a full-on record number of tickets, because there is a huge interest in Formula One coming back. And so they say it's covered, it's sorted. Normally I think the organizers said it would be sorted a month before or something, and it's going down to the wire. But they will have the staff, they will have the right amount of people to look after the ticket ticket buyers by that event. We're really looking looking forward to it, and we can't wait to get that coverage underway. Thank you very much for listening to the Autosport podcast today. Make sure you check out everything online, autosport.com, and the Plus area, the subscriber area, if you'd like to get deep down, and I hesitate to say dirty, into the deeper issues of motorsport and racing. Then make sure you sign up to that. It's where some of the finest writing in motorsport exists. But you be the judge of that. Check out Autosport Plus and, of course, the Autosport podcast. We'll be back soon.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Feeling stuck in your current job? Looking for a career pivot? Are you a proven leader looking to step up? The University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business prepares students to meet challenges, solve problems, and obtain a profound understanding of how to operate in the modern economy. With MBA and MS programs offering flexible options to fit your lifestyle and goals. GMAT and GRE not required. Learn more today at go.umd.edu/smithschool. University of Maryland Smith School of Business. Inspired, fearless, unstoppable.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.